Hi, this is Bill Meyer. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. There are many more podcasts for this and all of our other faith radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast. 9 past the hour. This is Faith Radio. Are today's liberals intolerant, close-minded authoritarians? Well, they may not see themselves that way, but if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, well, you get the idea. Joining us from Washington, D.C. is Kim Holmes. He's a distinguished fellow at the Heritage Foundation and a former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State. Kim has just released a new book entitled The Closing of the Liberal Mind. Good morning, Kim, and welcome to Faith Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, as a historian, I know you have traced the roots of progressive liberalism in America, and you point out that today's liberalism is it's a very different animal from the liberalism, let's say, of the 1960s. What are the roots of the modern day progressive movement, and how has it kind of morphed over the past 50 years?
Yeah, the 1960s is like the great divide in American history, in the history of progressivism. Prior to the 60s, you had the traditional progressivism of Roosevelt and both Roosevelts, Teddy and FDR, and even John F. Kennedy, who by today's standard would be quite conservative. And then after that, it all changed. And it changed mainly because of the rise of the new left and radicalism in the 60s, which imported a lot of new ideas into the bloodstream of American ideas, mainly from Europe. Ideas of cultural revolution, neo-Marxist ideas from the Frankfurt School of neo-Marxism, for example, that talked about making a sexual and cultural revolution in order to overturn capitalism. And at the time, those of us who I'm old enough to have lived through that decade, and I remember, you know, how radical it was, but then it kind of faded away in the 70s, or at least we thought it did. But in fact, many of the radicals of that cultural revolution of the 60s went into the universities and the school system, and they started marching through the institutions of America very quietly in some cases, below the radar screen. And so you would have conservative presidents like Ronald Reagan and Republicans, the two Bushes, for example, at the very top of the political system in America. But meanwhile, in the institutions and the culture, America was very slowly moving into this new vision of a new radical cultural America that had been introduced in the 1960s. And today, it's pretty much full-blown. Barack Obama basically opened the door for it to come into the mainstream. And now, it's pretty much the dominant ideology of America's ruling class.
Now, you argue that today's progressive liberals are actually authoritarian wolves in sheep's clothing. What are some of the more striking examples of that, let's say, from politics and from academia?
Well, from academia, it's anybody who goes to any of our so-called elite universities today, you have speech codes that control what can and cannot be said. You have so-called safe spaces that are basically areas of the university where certain kinds of ideas are excluded by the administration and by the professors. You have people like Condi Rice disinvited to speak. Universities, which is supposed to be the place where you have a so-called liberal education, is one of the most authoritarian, closed-minded places in America. But it's not only the universities. It's also in the federal government. You've seen this administration go after its enemies with the IRS. It's greatly expanded the use of regulations to control through Title IX, for example, what can and cannot be taught in the universities. And then recently, of course, you've seen the expansion of civil rights law from the Justice Department and the Education Department in the so-called bathroom wars in North Carolina. So you see a very aggressive use of federal power to advance this cultural revolution that started in the 1960s. There's many other examples, so-called a culture of zero tolerance in our schools, where some innocent young boy takes a Pop-Tart and puts it in the form of a gun and gets suspended. I mean, there's scores of examples of this, and it's all part of a larger piece, a much more aggressive policy on the part not only of the governments but also the courts and the culture in general to become to try to create a new alternative culture and political order in this country.
Now, those of us who hold more conservative views are often accused of being closed-minded. What are some ways that we conservatives maybe have been intolerant in the past, and have we learned from our mistakes, Kim?
Well, some have and some haven't. I use the word illiberalism, which is the opposite of the liberal-minded person who's supposed to be open to different points of view. And I'm talking here mainly about politics, not religion. So illiberalism can exist on the right, it can exist on the left. In more extreme forms, it's either on the right, it was in Europe, it was fascism, and also communism on the left. So that's the hard forms, but there are soft forms of it too, and that's what you really see today in what I call the postmodern left, where they are basically taking the idea of open-mindedness and tolerance as their narrative. But using the popular support for that idea as a value to actually press and use methods that are quite intolerant and quite closed-minded. And that's what worries me about the left, because it's a basic contradiction. Everyone thinks that they're doing the liberal work, but they're actually doing the opposite. And as far as conservatives are concerned, we have to be worried, have to be concerned that we don't want to fight fire with fire. There's a lot of people who support Donald Trump, for example, who are just fed up with political correctness, and they're saying we need a sort of a strong person to push back on this radical culture of the left. And so all of the limits on the checks and balances of government and the concerns about individual rights that any constitutional conservative have starts getting thrown out the window. So it does potentially exist on the right in that way, and of course there are still racists in this country, but not of the kind that the postmodern left talks about, where entire categories of people are simply assumed to be racist because they're, for example, white or exist in a certain class.
Yes, it's tough being a white male in America today.
Yeah, well, you're automatically assumed that no matter what you do in your individual life or what you hold in your heart, that you hold certain views. I describe in my book how that's basically stereotyping.
Our guest is Kim Holmes. He's the author of The Closing of the Liberal Mind. We'll take a quick break and be right back here on Faith Radio.
Pass on some hope. Tell a friend about Faith 90.7 and AM 900.
Welcome back. 19 past the hour, you've got the Faith Radio Network. Our guest, Kim Holmes, he's a distinguished fellow at the Heritage Foundation and a former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State. He has just released a new book called The Closing of the Liberal Mind. Very provocative and, I think, important book. And, Kim, do you believe that today's liberals are actually in denial about how intolerant and closed-minded they actually are?
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the reasons why I wrote the book. The glaring contradictions between what they profess to believe in and what many of them are actually doing in the name of progressivism is so huge that I thought I need to get to the bottom of this and tell the story of how it happened. And so even though partially my book is aimed at conservatives because I want them to be educated about what's going on, frankly, I'm also aiming at liberals themselves, because privately I hear from so-called moderate liberals, people who are probably more comfortable with the progressivism of the pre-1960s era, when they look around what's happening on the campuses and what the courts are doing and these culture wars in North Carolina and elsewhere, on the one hand, they kind of go, they say to themselves, well, transgenderism is just the next step in the sexual revolution of the 1960s. What's wrong with it? But on the other hand, they look and see what's happening with the on American campuses and the kind of intolerance that's happening there, and that makes them uncomfortable. And I want to try to explain to them. I say, you really can't have it both ways, because they're part of the same problem. You have to understand that you're enabling this kind of radicalism because you're not really getting to the root of how it's destroying the constitutional order and the value system of America, which you, as a progressive, at least a pre-1960s progressive, should be also trying to preserve. So it's a complicated problem. It's a complicated history. But I felt that the story needed to be told, not only to conservatives, but also to liberals.
Kim, explain, if you would, how a groupthink controls what liberals believe and how they view conservatives.
Well, have you ever been to a dinner or any gathering where you are the only conservative in the room with other liberals? They're often very, very polite. Not always, but very often they are, because everyone agrees. There's a consensus around the table. And if you happen to raise any concern in one of these hot area topics, particularly in culture, suddenly the room gets extremely quiet because you have violated the decorum of the room at that point. That's groupthink. It may not be about them actually arguing against you on the ideas, but it's creating a social space around you in which you cannot legitimately express any disagreement. And that manifests itself throughout the country. In the most extreme cases, of course, is when you create new legal concepts against, for example, hate speech that actually uses the force of law to control what you can and cannot say in a public space. And that's one example of groupthink. Another example is how in identity politics, whether you're talking about same-sex marriage or gender or transgenderism, you notice that for the left, people's rights are actually defined legally and morally based upon the membership of the group that they identify with. And the old classic liberal view from the American founding that you derive your rights either from God or from natural law individually and not by any class or race or gender group that you belong to is completely thrown out the window. And so that's another example of groupthink. That's what I mean it both ways.
Now, let's move to maybe a proactive response here, Kim. Given this current social political climate, what are the most effective ways for conservatives to make their case?
Well, the first thing you have to do is educate yourself. I'm afraid that many conservatives are shadowboxing with the past. They're thinking that they're dealing with the ghosts of Karl Marx or Woodrow Wilson and the old progressives and the old communists and socialists of the 19th and early 20th century. The postmodern left has moved way, way beyond that. And they are now into new ideas of identity politics, radical multiculturalism that have risen up in the American Academy over the last 40 years. And I don't think conservatives know enough about it. They're constantly being surprised by the next new radical issue, and they're reacting to it. We need to become more proactive, and the only way you can do that is to have a better understanding who the other side is. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book. And the second thing is that once you become armed with knowledge, you become confident in speaking up in those dinner parties and not being intimidated and created situations created where you start self-censoring. And then the third thing is conservatives need to start marching through the institutions themselves, through the universities, the school boards. Every major institution, including some of our mainline churches, have been affected by this new cultural change of the postmodern left. And the only way conservatives or can ever get this back is to start going into the grassroots of America and just start taking it back one step at a time. I know that electoral politics are important, the President of the United States is important, but that's not the way the new left took over America. They took it over one step at a time over the last 40 years.
And that needs to be our response, Kim. It's a great challenge to every one of us, especially as parents, as we educate our children and encourage them in the career fields and the education that they pursue. Well, Kim Holmes, thank you so much for your time today. Once again, the book is called The Closing of the Liberal Mind. You can learn more about Kim at the Heritage Foundation's website, heritage.org. Thank you, Kim. We appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
25 minutes past the hour. This is the Faith Radio Network. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. If you'd like more information about this show, you can visit our program page at myfaithradio.com.